Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Trump's tariff war moves into high gear. Putin's playing of Trump continues. And no peace in Gaza. First, Trump's tariff war moves into high gear. Trump's August 1 deadline for trade agreements has come and gone, still with no agreements finalized with the top 15 U.S. trade partners. Preliminary deals have been made with 9 of the top 15. 2 other deals are in negotiations, China and Mexico. And 4 countries, including India and Canada, have been targeted by Trump with high tariffs, not just for lack of an agreement, but because of their resistance to Trump's political demands. Let's take a closer look at these deals. China-U.S. trade talks in Stockholm were expected to lead to an agreement that would extend the current tariffs beyond the August 12 deadline. No agreement was reached. If the deadline passes, the U.S. will reimpose tariffs that could come to anywhere between 30 and 145%. Mexico was granted a 90-day extension on trade talks, meaning a 25% tariff rate remains in effect instead of the threatened 30%. As for the preliminary deals, Japan worked Trump down to 15%, based partly on a $550 billion commitment he claims Japan made to invest in the U.S. South Korea agreed to a 15% tariff rate and $350 billion worth of investments in the U.S. But Trump's claim that U.S. beef and rice will have greater access to the Korean market, a concession that has Korean farmers up in arms, was contradicted by Seoul. Note that the terms of these deals are fuzzy, with different expectations on each side. The European Union's agreed-upon rate was also 15%, up from 1.2%. The EU also promised major new investments and purchases of U.S. goods, and agreed to no tariff on U.S. exports to the EU. Most observers said the EU leadership decided that a bad deal was better than a trade war, and it is largely a bad deal, especially for German auto exports and French agricultural exports to the U.S. Here again, however, these investment promises may be just hype. Whether or not they will happen is unpredictable and will not be clarified for years to come. Next, the targeted countries. U.S.-India relations are not going well as Trump imposed a 25% tariff plus a penalty tariff if India did not stop buying Russian oil and military goods. Note that Trump has not imposed a penalty or tariff on Russia. Trump said the trade deficit with India was too high. This is a blow to the supposedly tight friendship between Trump and India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Then there's Canada and another example of injecting politics into trade deals. Wow, said Trump, Canada has just announced that it is backing statehood for Palestine. That will make it very hard for us to make a trade deal with them, he said. Canada is now subject to a 35% tariff on all goods not covered by the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney responded to Trump's tariff by stressing Canadian self-reliance. Quote, Canada will be our own best customer, creating more well-paying careers at home as we strengthen and diversify our trading partnerships throughout the world. Beyond the top 15 trade partners, one other ongoing case is Brazil, where Trump carried through on his threat to impose a 50% tariff on Brazilian imports, in a clumsy attempt to get a reprieve for his far-right buddy and coup conspirator, the former President Jair Bolsonaro, who is under house arrest awaiting trial. Brazil did not budge from opposing this intervention in its politics, and its stubbornness paid off as Trump exempted key Brazilian exports, such as civilian aircraft and orange juice, from the high tariff rate. Several important outcomes of the tariff war need to be clarified. First is the legality of Trump's tariffs. A U.S. Court of Appeals heard arguments on Trump's reliance on emergency economic powers to impose tariffs. No doubt the Supreme Court will take on this matter. Second is the impact of the tariffs on the U.S. economy. While the stock market and corporate profits are up, consumer spending is down, inflation is up, and the job market is far down, which is why Trump had to fire the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Corporate layoffs are the highest in 5 years. And 113,000 manufacturing jobs have been lost over the past year. It's bewildering to me that liberal media such as the Washington Post are proclaiming Trump's tariffs a win for the administration. Third point, it is likely that economic news will get worse. That's because, as a writer for The Atlantic explains, quote, many companies did in fact stock up on imported goods before the tariffs kicked in. Others have been eating the cost of the tariffs to avoid raising prices in the hopes that the duties would go away. Now that tariffs seem to be here to stay, more and more companies will likely be forced to either raise prices or slash their costs, including labor costs. A return to the 1970s-style combination of rising inflation and unemployment is looking a lot more likely, unquote. That, folks, is called stagflation. Putin's playing of Trump continues. President Trump gave Vladimir Putin 50 days to reach a ceasefire agreement with Ukraine or face U.S. sanctions. Some people actually believed either that Putin would rush to the negotiating table or that Trump would impose sanctions on Russia if it did not. Late last month, following a third round of talks, Russia's representative put the kibosh on Putin's taking part in peace talks, saying the two sides had diametrically opposed peace plans, which is true, and therefore that there would be no Putin-Zelensky meeting to sign off on an agreement. Zelensky reiterated his view that only a face-to-face meeting with Putin can resolve differences. In the face of Russian intransigence, will Trump follow through on his threat of sanctions? All he has said is gobbledygook. At one point he said, it's going to happen, a Putin-Zelensky meeting, but it should have happened 3 months ago. It's going to happen. It could be that we'll have to put secondary sanctions on Russia. Maybe, he said, sooner than his 50-day deadline. While golfing in Scotland, Trump said he was disappointed with Russia and might impose sanctions in 10 to 12 days. Russia's former president, Dmitry Medvedev, introduced a volatile new element in the dispute by reminding the U.S. that Russia has formidable nuclear weapon capabilities. Trump took the bait and ordered two nuclear submarines to be deployed, quote, in the appropriate regions, in response to Medvedev's, quote, foolish and inflammatory statements. Then Trump went off to his golf club, and Russia continued bombing Kyiv. A UN human rights group in Ukraine reports that Russia launched 10 times as many attacks on Ukraine in July as it did in June, with the highest number of civilians killed and injured in 3 years. And still, no sanctions on Russia. No peace in Gaza. As I reported in my Tuesday commentary, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his far-right supporters are brazenly violating the Genocide Convention by starving the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip and by moving ahead with plans to annex Gaza and the West Bank, forcibly removing their populations. No doubt the far-right has been emboldened by the U.S. decision to withdraw from peace talks with Hamas. Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy to the talks, said Hamas's leadership showed, quote, a lack of desire to reach a ceasefire in Gaza. How strange that he did not mention the Netanyahu government's lack of desire, amply demonstrated not just by the starvation and deportation policies, but also by its insistence that Hamas lay down its arms and its rejection of a permanent ceasefire. And Netanyahu has just said that Israel intends to occupy Gaza. Trump's optimism about peace being at hand has shown him out of touch with actual conditions. Trump did profess concern about starvation conditions in Gaza, telling Israel to allow every ounce of food, quote-unquote, into Gaza. But will Trump do anything when Netanyahu continues to sharply limit food aid in Gaza? Will Trump oppose Israel's annexation of occupied land? Will he deprive Israel of weapons? The answer is almost no to every one of those. France's President Emmanuel Macron has announced that France will recognize a Palestinian state when the UN General Assembly convenes in the fall. The United Kingdom announced it will do the same, provided Israel does not agree to a ceasefire in Gaza. Canada added to the list. The three countries join around 140 other countries that have done so, but not the U.S., which instead has announced that it will deny visas to Palestine Liberation Organization and Palestinian Authority officials. Nothing like punishing the victim. Still, when all is said and done, one has to ask whether recognition of Palestinian statehood, while a noble act, will do anything to prevent the ongoing carnage in Gaza. In other news, Thailand and Cambodia agreed to a ceasefire in their border dispute. After several days of trading fire, Thailand and Cambodia agreed to an unconditional ceasefire and talks between regional military commanders. Thai and Cambodian forces had both reported casualties in a resumption of their long-running dispute over a border that is over 800 kilometers long. The Thai Air Force had reportedly struck military targets in Cambodia. As I've reported previously, this dispute began when Thailand's Prime Minister Prithongthon Chinawatra was accused of betraying the nation by cozying up to Cambodia's one-time strongman, Hun Sen, the father of the current Prime Minister. The Thai Prime Minister was suspended from office on July 1. An acting Prime Minister attended the ceasefire announcement, which took place in Malaysia. Although Malaysia and China played key roles in the ceasefire agreement, Donald Trump took all the credit for it. On his badly named Truth Social, he wrote, quote, "By ending this war, we have saved thousands of lives. I have instructed my trade team to restart negotiations on trade. I have now ended many wars in just 6 months. I am proud to be the president of peace." The man's ego is boundless. He hasn't ended any wars. Actually, Trump is being criticized in Southeast Asia for using the threat of high tariffs to pressure Thailand and Cambodia to settle their differences. Indirect coercion is how one Thai legislator characterized Trump's peace initiative. North Korea rejects South Korea's peace overtures. South Korea's new president has been focused on domestic affairs and only to a small extent on North Korea. Lee Jae-myung did take one small step to ease tensions with the North. He suspended loudspeaker broadcasts blasting anti-North propaganda across the border, and he banned the flying of leaflets by activists that had angered Pyongyang. But Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un's powerful sister, Kim Yo-jong, said those moves are merely a reversal of ill-intentioned activities by South Korea that should never have been made in the first place. In other words, she said, it's not even something worth our assessment. We again make clear the official position that whatever policy is established in Seoul or proposal is made, we are not interested and we will not be sitting down with South Korea and there is nothing to discuss, unquote. South Korea's National Intelligence Service is said to believe that the North now has a sense of confidence that it finds itself in a much more favorable strategic environment. That is said to be because its nuclear capabilities have expanded, it has backing from Russia through its dispatch of troops to the Ukraine war, and North Korea has become the largest arms supplier to Russia in the war. Consequently, Seoul's National Intelligence Service reports, Kim Jong-un is not in a rush either to meet with South Korea's new president or resume talks with the United States, and in neither case with denuclearization on the agenda. Finally, a former international crimes prosecutor warns of executions in Iran. Stephen J. Rapp has issued a warning to the international community about rising executions of dissenters in Iran. He was chief of prosecutions at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and the prosecutor of the Special Court for Sierra Leone. Executions, not gunfire, says Rapp, have become the regime's long-term weapon of repression. In 2023, more than 850 people were put to death. In 2024, the number approached 1,000. This year, a UN special rapporteur warned that Iran is set to surpass that figure again. Since the war with Israel, Rapp writes, quote, the regime's response to its perceived vulnerability has become increasingly aggressive. Though its failures might be attributed to incompetence and the foreign penetration of its security services, its fury is being directed at domestic political opponents. Thousands of Iranians are in danger as Parliament now seeks to expedite death sentences in cases involving imagined collaboration with foreign entities, unquote. Iran's Revolutionary Guard is reminding people of death commissions that sentenced around 30,000 political prisoners to executions in 1988. Rapp calls on global institutions to act now. He writes, quote, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights should use his authority to launch a fact-finding mission that would signal to the regime that its judicial murders would be exposed to the world, and democratic governments around the world should impose sanctions on perpetrators of Iran's human rights abuses, unquote. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.